Hi, everyone. So sitting down today, going to be talking with Tony Garcia. He's a strength coach, jiu-jitsu coach, kettlebell master, probably most importantly, a good overall human. And he's a coach and kind of owner of Industrial Strength in Portland, Oregon. We're going to be talking about the utilization of kettlebells, why we use a kettlebell, types of kettlebells, unilateral versus bilateral training. What are some common misconceptions with kettlebells? What we would love to see people do more of with kettlebells, and even going over some correctives and coaching cues with kettlebell training. If you're not using kettlebells, and regardless of your training or your profession, I think you're missing out. There's a load that a kettlebell provides that cannot be matched by any other device. I would argue it's probably the most functional way of loading that you can provide to the human body. And I think it has, and Tony says this himself, it has this reputation of being this like cardio-based tool where you do high reps and all these flows. But I think kettlebells play a big role in the idea of progressive overloading. So we're going to be talking with Tony, reviewing all of that. But if you don't know Tony, go to industrialstrength.com. They even have online training if you do want to go through some of their kettlebell coursework. But Tony, just to list off some of his experiences and specialties, he's Strong First certified. He is a Strong First, which is like the kind of mecca, the main education front for kettlebell training, invented or founded by Pavel. But anyway, he does instructor work for their barbell course, their kettlebell course, even their body weight coursework. He's written and worked with the functional movement screening. He's done functional range conditioning. He's NASM certified as well. But this guy's list goes on and on and on. But really, I think what you're going to love about this is I like the way his like realistic, his reality, his practical point of view on things. And if you haven't seen him teach or been taught by him in regards to kettlebells, he does just an amazing job of making what can be somewhat complex tasks easy to learn and easy to understand. The point he makes in our talk today is any form of strength and conditioning, but particularly kettlebell work, takes years of practice. It's not like you just get taught once and it clicks and you got it figured out. So again, just listen. You're going to get all this. You're going to enjoy a lot out of it. I really appreciate Tony taking the time. So enjoy, guys. All right, Tony, thanks for making the time today. I know you got a lot going on, so I appreciate it, especially with the COVID world we're living in and how hectic things can be. But, you know, I've known you for a few years. I know you're a specialist and have a lot of great knowledge on a lot of different topics, but I did want to talk about kettlebell training today because it's something I know you have a better foundation than I do myself, and I think something the audience will really appreciate. But give us a little background on who you are, where you're currently working, kind of maybe some mentors or some influencers along your way to kind of help you get where you're at today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to college and graduated from Linfield. At the time, it was Linfield College, and recently they've become Linfield University, and graduated in exercise science from there, and then worked for maybe like 6 years at a big box gym in Portland, and then in 2013, started up Industrial Strength with Mira, who's now my wife. We were, I think, just dating at the time. But so we've had Industrial Strength since 2013. And we do personal training. We do group classes as well as martial arts. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is something I've done for my entire adult life. So coming up close to 20 years now. And so we're stoked to have that as part of the program. And then as far as like mentors and influences in the field, there's been a lot because I'm a big believer in trying to grow and having continuing education. And so I would say, trying to narrow it down to three, the first person who I would say is really influential for me and actually inspired me to open my own gym as opposed to sticking with the corporate fitness model was Joe DeFranco.
Okay.
So he was awesome. We flew out and met with him back in like 2010 and did some workouts at his gym, as well as a few other places back east. And he was just awesome. He was a great guy and super passionate and in the industry for all the right reasons. And so he was sort of the first one. And then I would say number two should probably not be a shock, considering the route that we've taken is Pavel, who's the founder of Strong First and is credited by many people as sort of being the revolutionary, bringing kettlebells and popularizing them in the United States. And I've had the pleasure to actually meet both of them. The third one I've not met, but I love the work he puts out and would love a chance to meet him someday, and that's Eric Cressy.
Yeah. Does Pavel still, what's his involvement with Strong First these days? Does he still like teach courses and things, or is he more kind of like a overseer, or do you know?
He does a select number of courses. He typically doesn't teach any of the, so Strong First has sort of two types of workshops or certifications you can go to. They've got a variety of hands-on ones where you're learning to use kettlebells or barbells or et cetera, et cetera. He doesn't do as much of those anymore. He used to, but I think now he focuses more on like theory and philosophy. So he has some specialized, let's call it like programming type courses that and workshops that he teaches. And so he personally teaches some of those. And then he has some of the top people underneath of him teach some. And then he still is an author. He does, you know, books and articles and things like that. And just kind of is, I think, running the ship, so to speak.
And then what's the jujitsu connection? Have you always done that since you were young, or how the kind of gym blend model start there?
Yeah, I started jujitsu when I, so growing up, baseball was my big sport, and I loved it and was super passionate about it. And at the same time, after I finished my senior year high school, I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe it's time to try something different or whatever. And that was 2003, and nobody really knew what jujitsu was back then. I was one of the few people that knew it. In fact, I told one of my baseball buddies I was starting jujitsu, and he thought it was like a pottery class or something. So I started that in 2003 and was just absolutely in love from the very first class. And so when we decided to open Industrial in 2013, I kind of got a nudge actually from my jujitsu coach to include some jujitsu in what we do. But at the end of the day, the vision for our gym was to open a gym for the type of training that we love to do and that is authentic to us. And that is strength training. And in my case, that's jujitsu. So it was just a perfect fit when it comes down to just that authenticity. We kind of said, like, we can't be the only people out there that like this stuff, but there's no gyms that offer it all under one roof. So we're going to be the first one that does.
I like it. And then for our topic today, do you feel like kettlebell training kind of bleeds perfectly into jujitsu?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anybody out there does jujitsu and wants a strength and conditioning component to go with it, kettlebells is absolutely my number one recommendation for that.
Yeah. Makes complete sense. Well, let's get into it. So let's start with an overarching question, and then we'll kind of break down the details afterwards. Is if you could get like on a soapbox and declare misconceptions about kettlebell training, what do you think people have wrong or thoughts wrong or about kettlebell training, or what do you wish trainers knew more about in regards to kettlebell training?
Absolutely. The answer to that is a great question. The answer to that is sort of based off where I think most people get their kettlebell perceptions from. And I'm going to say that that's probably Instagram these days.
Yeah.
And so on Instagram, you see a lot of, in fact, most of what you see and what gets the most views and all that stuff are kettlebell flows.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what those are. That's nothing like how we train, train with them. And so I think if that is your exposure to kettlebells, that's very different than how we train and how we recommend people train. So when it comes to the misconception, what I say is that kettlebell training can and should be used in a progressive system. You know, I think people don't realize that kettlebells are a great tool to do progressive training with, in the same way that you would do progressive training with a barbell, right? Where you maybe have a 3 month long training cycle with a barbell. You start with a, you know, baseline max. And then at the end of it, you want to try to beat that max. We have that same system for kettlebells and it works. Like, we've had some pretty outstanding results from people of all fitness levels, people that have never had a gym membership before, all the way up to people that, you know, were like a collegiate athlete or whatever.
Yeah.
But the misconception is that people think it's just random workouts that you do. Yeah. And if I can change anything, then that's what we would change, is we want to treat it as a progressive system where you try to set a baseline, create a plan, and then use the plan to eventually beat your baseline.
Yes. Yeah. I think people think of them almost as like cardio aerobic training where you do flows or complexes and you try to do as many as you can in 5 minutes or whatever.
Well, yeah. It's almost like, I don't even know if I would say it like that. It's almost like, I mean, you know how like there's such things as like dance fitness workouts where you just go and like you have fun and you like burn some calories and that's the extent of it. Yeah. Like, people treat their kettlebells like that. Yes. And I mean, if that's what you want to do, then I guess that's fine. But if I want to make sure that people know that you can have like a progressive system to accomplish some like seriously impressive numbers with these things by using a thoughtful and systematic approach.
Yeah, like, I feel like I'm a prime example. So with COVID, I kind of built out my own like home gym, basically just bought a bunch of kettlebells, did your swings and deadlifts and carries and get ups and all that. And then I probably didn't actually do a barbell or a hex bar deadlift for 6 to 9 months. And then I walk into the gym and do a deadlift and I like PR my deadlift for the first time.
That happens a lot. Exactly. We've had some people do that in our place too.
Yeah. It's just like the power of like, yeah, moving well. And we'll get it. What's actually, we can get into it right now. What do you think, what does a kettlebell offer that maybe a barbell or a dumbbell or et cetera doesn't? What makes kettlebell training unique, I guess?
I think the kettlebells are the most efficient and pragmatic tool for the fitness needs of most adults. And I'm going to include that as adults that are, or anybody that's training jujitsu and wants to use this for their strength and conditioning for that.
Yes.
And to dive a little deeper into that, in my opinion, the main three qualities that most adults need for their overall fitness program are going to be strength, endurance, and mobility, taking care of their joints, taking care of their body. And the kettlebell is by far the best tool to cover all three of those. Barbells can certainly get you stronger if you move well enough to do your lifts with good form with them, but they're not going to even put a dent in endurance or mobility for most people.
No.
The most popular home gym thing, I think, is probably undeniably like a Peloton right now.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, cycling can build some endurance, but it's not going to put a dent in strength. And it's probably only going to hurt your mobility for most people if that's all that you do, right? So if you want all three buckets, you want strength, you want endurance, and you want mobility, kettlebells are by far the best thing to cover all three of those.
Do you feel like the type of kettlebell matters, meaning like the iron in it or the actual material it's made out of? Or, I mean, I'm not an expert here. Like, some kettlebells have like a longer handle versus a shorter handle, or just like the biomechanics of the kettlebell itself.
Yeah, that's a good question. So on one of my podcasts that I did in the first lockdown, I went into a fairly deep dive on that. But here's the short answer. There's two main styles of kettlebells. There's the cast iron or hard style, which is the most common style. Yeah. And with those, as the weight gets heavier, the dimensions of the kettlebell get bigger. And that's what most people buy. And that's what I would recommend most people probably buy if they're going to go buy a set. The other style is a competition style, where they make a shell out of either steel or iron or some other metal.
Yeah.
And then they fill it to a certain amount so that all of the weights, regardless of very light or very heavy, are the same dimensions. Yeah. And if you're, so I'm 6 foot, 190-ish. If you're around my size, those competition ones can feel really good and they can sit on your arm well.
Yeah.
But if you're smaller, it's probably going to feel really awkward and clunky. And so I think for most people, the cast iron or hard style are going to be the way to go.
Okay.
Now, within those, each brand is, there's some variance as far as the specific dimensions, how thick the handle is, how far from the spherical part the handle sits, smoothness of the kettlebell, and coating of the kettlebell. So there are a lot of options out there. The most popular type of coating on a hard style kettlebell is going to be a powder coat.
Yeah.
And that is fine. It's going to be the most affordable and the easiest to come by. And for home gym use, it's probably totally fine. Downsides of the powder coat are, once you get better technique, a lot of people want something a little smoother. Initially, they like it because their technique isn't really honed and they like the more rough texture. But as your technique gets better, usually something slightly smoother is preferred. And then two, the powder coat is not as durable as some of the others. It can chip, and once it starts to chip, it can start to rust and so on. So powder coat's fine. Don't not buy a bell because it's powder coated.
Yeah.
But if you're somebody that likes to maybe spend a little bit more money up front to get something that is going to just last forever, then what we buy are e-coated kettlebells. I think it stands for an electrostatic coat.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit smoother at first, which when you're new, it feels almost too slick, but you learn to like it after a while. And we've had ours for close to 10 years. And there's no chipping, like almost negligible rust. Like, they're awesome. They're really good.
And then what's your theory or methodology behind using two kettlebells versus one? I mean, obviously, if you're doing like a bilateral arm pattern, like a hinged row, like let's say you're doing goblets or, I don't know, lunges or something like that. When do you typically, what are some patterns where you like to use two kettlebells versus one kettlebell?
Yeah, so I guess, so if any of your listeners out there are listening to the podcast and thinking about starting kettlebell training, two kettlebells are not required. It's nice to have, but it's not a requirement to get started. And specifically, two matching kettlebells are not required. As long as they're close enough, like within 4 kilos of each other, you can do, you know, your lunges or something and have the heavier one on one side and the lighter one on the other side.
Yeah.
And then next set, swap them so it evens out.
Yeah.
We do that a lot. And a lot of people do that for their at-home workouts just because it's, you know, it minimizes the number of kettlebells that they need to buy and store in their house.
Yeah.
As for the benefits, the main one is if you want to really go after some hypertrophy, then double kettlebells are going to be a lot faster route to do that compared to single kettlebells, just because you're putting twice as much overall weight on the body, right? You certainly can build muscle with single kettlebells. It's just probably going to happen a little bit faster if you go with doubles. And from my experience, single kettlebells, as long as you go up heavy enough, are totally sufficient to challenge upper body strength, even for some of the strongest people I've met, right? Like, you know, it's pretty common for kettlebells to go up to 48 kilograms, which is 106 pounds. And trying to do a one-arm military press with that is no joke, right? That's really, really heavy. And there's not very many people that can do that. I can't do that. That's heavier than I can do.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's a lot of people that can deadlift that, no problem. Or even like goblet squat it, and it's not that hard for them. So when you want to really challenge your lower body strength, that's a good time to bring in the two kettlebells for your, we call them double kettlebell front squats, or if you're going to do lunges or something like that, that's a nice place to have your double kettlebells.
Got it. Let's talk a little bit of like program design. So maybe it'd be easiest to do it if we had like a standard example to work up. So like, let's say you have a 35 to 40 year old male who's trying to get fit, get strong, he's in decent shape and he's coming to you just to like get the workout in, maybe comes in twice a week or whatnot. How do you, where do you use your kettlebell in your like a single workout, like in regards to warm up, to hypertrophy, to maybe some aerobic based training, or how do you program typically the use of a kettlebell in a single training session?
It's a good question, and it's hard to give a concise answer because of, because of the versatility of kettlebells, right?
Yeah.
So circling back to what I said earlier, our main three things that we believe are the qualities that most adults, including the sort of avatar that you just gave me, are going to be strength, endurance, and mobility. Like if we make progress in all those areas, people are going to be really happy with the results that they get. And so some of our workouts focus largely on one of those things. Like we might do like more of a strength-based workout. Yeah. Some workouts focus more on endurance, and then some do both, right? Almost all sessions we typically are going to, you know, start it off with at least a little bit of mobility and getting the body moving and stuff like that. So that's pretty universal there as far as the mobility goes. So the kettlebell can be used standalone for any of those sessions, even if it was just a strength workout, right? I could focus on a lot of Turkish get-ups. I could focus on my kettlebell presses and squats and things of that nature. And I've got a great, great strength workout. If I want to focus mostly on endurance, well, that's where I can do whatever ballistics this person is skilled enough at to do, be it two-handed swings, one-handed swings, snatches, jerks. Jerks with kettlebells are very tricky, by the way, so we don't include those a lot in our programs. But just swings in and of themselves are awesome for most people, and people can get a lot of mileage out of those. So there's a ton of options for it. You know, you could certainly do a workout where kettlebells play part of the role, where maybe you get somebody in, they do 10 minutes of some basic mobility work. Then if you want to do a hybrid where you include some barbells and some body weight stuff, they could work on maybe their some barbell, you know, Zercher squats are one of my favorite techniques. And maybe they do some Zercher squats and some chin-ups for a little while, and then finish with some swings to get their heart rate up at the end.
Got it. So like, what's like a kettlebell mobility drill you do? Like, do you look at like the get up as like a mobility drill, or what are some?
Yeah. So I think mobility is a word that most professionals these days use to mean both the range of motion that the joint can get into, as well as the ability to be controlled and functional there, as opposed to just passive range, which, you know, has its limitations, right? And so with the former definition in mind, then yes, all of those drills are mobility drills. Turkish get-up is probably one of the best because you put your shoulders into almost every imaginable plane of motion, and they have to stabilize either the kettlebell floating up above you, or they have to stabilize your whole body when you look down at the support arm, right?
Yeah.
And so just by having people do Turkish get-ups and two other good shoulder mobility drills with the kettlebell are going to be arm bars and halos.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just get those three going, you're going to really see some significant improvements in your shoulder mobility.
And for people who don't know what those are, what's like an arm bar?
A good question, because we've also talked about jujitsu, and they're very different things.
Yes.
Jujitsu arm bar and a kettlebell arm bar. One is bad for your arm and one's really good for it.
Yeah.
So a kettlebell arm bar is going to start exactly like a Turkish get up. And so but for an arm bar, you're typically going to use a much lighter kettlebell than you would for a Turkish get up.
Yep.
So for an arm bar, you're lying on your side. You use two hands to grip the kettlebell, roll to your back, press it up, just like you would start a Turkish get up. Indistinguishable. But then instead of propping up to your elbow and moving into a standing position, what you're then going to do is turn and lay on your other side. And so if you imagine you're holding the kettlebell in your right hand, you're going to have pressed that up to the sky from flat on your back. And then you're going to turn and roll to your left. So your right shoulder holding the kettlebell is up to the sky. Your left side, your left rib cage is down on the ground. and you try to form a straight line between your left fingertips and your left toes. And so your body is perpendicular to the ground. Instead of being flat on the ground, you're perpendicular. And the right arm holding the kettlebell is also perfectly vertical, like a flagpole. Yeah. And so you're holding that arm, holding the kettlebell up there typically for a minute or so. And the kettlebell tends to feel very wobbly. You've just created a long lever that the kettlebell's at the end of, and it sort of dances around. And so it helps get the shoulder, the rotator cuff and everything to work on stabilizing the joint from this, you know, fairly end range of motion for most people.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. In regards to the, maybe the more like aerobic, higher intensity, what are like your sets and reps for that? Like, I know Pavel's a big, like you do like sets of five and take a 2 minute break and do five sets of five or whatever, but how do you, what are your like sets and reps for some of these more strength or higher intensity workouts?
Yeah, it's a good question. And this is another area that I think is a big misconception for a lot of people is that they think that endurance training with kettlebells or with any sort of like functional fitness equipment has to be a, there's a term I heard from Pavel actually called an acid bath, where you just like go as hard as you can. And your body's just like creating so much lactic acid and it's just absolutely miserable. And, you know, when I was a little earlier in my career and hadn't had as much training and education yet, I certainly was guilty of doing some of those things. After a while and I kind of got my hands on some other methodologies, my go-to style for most of our training, most of the time, is something that Pavel calls an ANA method. So an alactic effort and an aerobic recovery. And what that is generally going to be is using some sort of a explosive exercise. Let's call it a kettlebell swing or a kettlebell snatch. And you're going to try to be very powerful with your reps, and you're going to terminate the sets before you lose power on any reps.
Yeah.
And for most people, most of the time, that's going to be between 5 to 10 reps of their exercise. And that means you need to be doing this with a heavy enough weight, right? Like, for a lot of people, they understandably start kettlebell training with a lighter weight because they want to learn to get the form right, et cetera. And of course that makes sense. And you also have to start progressing your weights and handling heavier loads in order to start getting the benefit of this stuff, right? And so you take a weight that is hard for you to be, you can be explosive for your 5 to 10 reps, but if I asked you to add another 5 on top of that, you couldn't, you would lose your explosiveness. So that sort of is how you decide what weight to use.
Yeah.
And so you give a very hard effort. You're not just giving the minimum effort to get the weight moving. You are like overpowering this every time. It almost as if you were to let go of your hand in the middle of one of the reps, you'd want to see how far you could send the kettlebell flying, right?
Yes.
So you do that for your 5 to 10 reps, park the bell, and then you take a recovery long enough that you can repeat that effort again with no decrease in performance because of the fatigue you're accumulating. And so some people choose their rest intervals organically, and that's totally fine. To help me just stay on track and to help me stay more progressive with it, we often just use kind of an EMOM type format, every minute on the minute, where you'll do your somewhere between 5 to 10 reps and do that for an extended period. You know, often I think 20 to 40 minutes is often the normal range that's recommended there. And that's where most of mine are in that kind of 20 to 40 minute range most of the time. Again, the idea is that you want to have your very last set, let's say you're going for 30 minutes, your last set should look just as good and just as powerful as your first set.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to sell to clients, right? I understand like the issue people or the trainers have, whoever's doing it, where you know, the mindset is if I'm not shot or sweating or hitting the wall, I'm not doing a workout. But then the contrary to that is people do that 4 or 5 days a week, they eventually, something gives and they injure themselves. But it's just, it's not the easiest conversation to have with clients or some, you know, it's tricky.
Yeah, it can be very tricky. And, you know, every once in a while we'll do what we call like a stress test, right? Yeah. And that kind of circles back to one of like the very first things you and I talked about here about that sort of like progression and like a progressive overload.
Yeah.
Is we will throw in stress tests once a month, once every 2 months, once every 3 months. And those are going to be potentially those sort of like acid bath sort of things.
Yeah.
Where, you know, let's say you're going to do one-handed kettlebell swings and your goal is 100 reps in a 5 minute time period. We do that by breaking it down to 10 reps every 30 seconds. That's a very fast cadence.
Yeah.
That's really quick, right? So we don't do it all the time. It's not sustainable to do it all the time and you're going to burn out and you're going to plateau super fast. And it also is really difficult to maintain good form the last couple minutes of that. And at the same time, it's important to have those stress tests too, so you see where you're at, right? And so that's one example of one of the stress tests that we'll do. And all of the other training, those sort of, you know, A&A that I just discussed earlier, like that helps build you to it. Because if you can accumulate thousands and thousands of really good reps between your stress tests, your second stress test is going to go a lot better.
Yes.
And then you're going to be able to handle it with better form, eventually be able to handle it with better weight, and so on and so on and so on. And so if you take that stress test that I just said, the 100 swings in a 5 minute time period, a lot of people, when they first start out, maybe somebody your size, you might use like a 16 kilo at first, 35 pounds. And that would be fine to start with. And I promise you, if you give me 2 years with you, we're going to double that weight. And you're going to be doing it with 32 kilos, 70 pounds. And we have countless examples of people who've done that exact progression with.
And you're not burning them out 5 times a week to do that.
No, a lot of them train 2 or 3 times a week. And that's just what their schedule is, because they work, they've got a family, they've got whatever. And they need something that fits into all of the other aspects of their life. And so if they hit 2 or 3 of our 45 minute kettlebell classes each week, that works for them.
Yeah.
And we just let the consistency and the long-term volume do the job.
Yeah. Well said. All right. So when people think of like kettlebells, they think of swings, snatches, carries, goblets, presses. What do you think a movement pattern exercise people really struggle with kettlebells? Or if you're watching your Instagram feed, you cringe because you always see people struggle with, is it a snatch or which one's maybe tricky for people to get the hang of?
I think kind of circling back to the different styles of kettlebell training or whatever.
Yeah.
What would make me very happy is to see people spend more time getting extremely sharp, good technique on swings and get-ups. And if they can do that, they're going to get so much long-term progress. Their body's going to feel great. They're going to take care of their joints. And they're going to be able to do this sustainably for years and years.
Yes.
I think sometimes we, I'm actually working on a blog post about this right now.
Yeah.
Sometimes a lot of people think that that their goal is to do an exercise, be it a kettlebell snatch or barbell Olympic lifting or back squats or whatever. And it sort of is this like, that's what their goal is, as opposed to asking themselves, what is the exercise doing for them? And I think that most people would be well served trying to milk get-ups and squats for a lot more, instead of kind of brushing them away as sort of like the beginner movements or whatever, and trying to get to something more complicated. Because swings and get-ups to be done well are very technically complicated.
Yes.
An analogy I kind of use, a couple analogies I use is, so I've basically never golfed a day in my life, right? And so if you took me to a golf pro and set me up with a lesson to learn how to like drive or whatever, like I could make the club hit the ball, right? But that's not going to make me a good golfer in like one lesson.
Yeah.
Like it's going to take a long time to refine that golf swing to be even like halfway decent and reach my potential on that motion. And another similar example is with jujitsu, right? I get a new jujitsu student and I teach them, you know, the technique that the class is learning this day. I can get them to sort of learn the basics of it in their first class, but are they going to be even close to as good at that technique as the black belt who's teaching it, that's done it for 20 years? No, like it's an unreasonable expectation, right? Yeah. But when it comes to fitness, people don't view it with that same lens. They think that one lesson is enough for them to learn the technique, and then that's as good as they ever need to be at it. And I hope that we can change that mindset and understand that you can get a basic grasp of something, sure, in like one or two lessons, or for us, it takes us about a week to get somebody like a reasonable kettlebell swing. But it's a lifelong journey to try to, you know, get every little bit out of it, because there's so many details that really do matter and really do influence how beneficial those exercises are going to be. And yeah. I hope that people can, you know, really see the value in that and not overlook it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to learn like some cues that you use. This is obviously hard when it's like abstract and there's not something right in front of us, but like, let's say someone's doing a swing and they're struggling with like maybe the hip hinge, or maybe they're over finishing the swing, or they're kind of ending out in their lumbar spine and they're kind of sitting in the back seat. What are some other things? Maybe their shoulders are rounded. Maybe their neck isn't stacked. You know, some common things you see people do wrong with swings. What are some cues that you like to use, if they're external or internal, to ideally clean up form?
That's a good question. So the way that we prefer to teach the swing, so yeah. Kettlebell movements are broken down into one of two categories: ballistics and grinds.
Yep.
A swing is a ballistic, where I apply one impulse to the kettlebell and the kettlebell keeps moving without me needing to continually apply force to it. It'd be like throwing a ball. I'd like whip my arm the one time and the ball keeps going without me needing to continually apply force to it. And then grinds are like a Turkish get up, where if I stop applying force to it, the kettlebell is going to fall down. And so with ballistics, and the swing again is where you should start with ballistics. The way that we teach those are, we teach the person the starting position, which is the hip hinge. We teach them the finish position, which is a standing plank. And both of those we can usually get decently well fairly quickly.
What do you mean by a standing plank?
So just like in a plank on the ground, your body should form a straight line. Your core is tight, your glutes are squeezed, everything is rigid, and all of your joints are stacked and aligned well. If you took that and flipped it 90 degrees to a standing position, that's what the finish of a deadlift should look like. It's what the finish of a swing should look like. The finish of a kettlebell snatch should look like.
So do you have them stand there and like have the kettlebell kind of hang from their arms and kind of hold like a standing plank?
Yep, exactly.
Makes sense. Yep, so
that's exactly what it should look like. As opposed to one of the common technique errors you just mentioned, the person's like leaning back too much at the top. That would look like a pretty bad plank if you put them on the ground in the same position. It also looks like a bad kettlebell swing.
Yeah.
The good news is that those are static positions. And so we can teach them those static positions pretty successfully, pretty quickly. The hard part, and so if somebody can't do the static positions well, they don't get to do swings yet. It's just because if you can't be in the start position or the finish position, then nothing in between is going to go well either.
Yep.
And so if there's problems there, we address those before they start swinging. The hardest part with the swing for the vast majority of people is the the motion between the two, and specifically the timing. And timing is very difficult to teach. And there's no substitute for just a lot of reps under the watchful eye of a coach. And this is something that is, I think, not appreciated enough by most coaches and also by a lot of clinicians. I suspect a lot of clinicians are potentially listening to this.
Yeah.
And if I want them to understand that somebody can have a very good, a textbook hip hinge, perfect neutral spine, they sit into their hips well, like all the stuff you would want, and you can still hurt your back if your timing is bad on a swing. In fact, that's one of the most common ways that people hurt their back. And so getting the timing to be dialed and optimal is probably the most difficult part of the kettlebell swing. And it's like the most important part of, yes, of the kettlebell swing. And so to dive a little bit deeper into that, I think we all know that the closer we hold a weight to our body, the stronger we are, and the easier it is for us to manage that load. Mm-hmm. And the farther away from our body, the more difficult it's going to be. A funny example of that, one of our coaches used to be in the military, and they said one of the things that they used to do to kind of, you know, keep them in line would be they would have somebody hold a pencil, and they would hold the pencil between their two index fingers and hold it out at arm's length in front of them. And they would have to hold it for minutes and minutes. And if they dropped the pencil, the whole group had to do push-ups or go run miles, mm-hmm, or whatever, whatever. And because that's at arm's length out in front of you, this pencil all of a sudden becomes crazy heavy when you hold it there long enough, right? But if you held that, you know, right against your body, it'd be a lot easier to hold it because the lever's a lot shorter. So with the kettlebell swing, what we need to do is we need to not start the motion of going into our hip hinge until the kettlebell is already against our hips.
Yes.
All right. If the kettlebell is still out in front of me at arm's length, or I've only let it fall part of the way down to my hips, and I already move back into my hip hinge, the kettlebell is too far away from my hips and from my lower back. And what's going to happen is that I don't have the ability to absorb the falling weight with my hips anymore. And inevitably, it's going to be very jarring and irritating onto your lower back.
Yeah.
In addition to knocking you off balance. So you're going to be out of balance. You're going to be out of position. You're going to have less elasticity in your tissues to absorb the weight. And the weight is going to be farther from your hips. So your leverage is worse. So it's a hot mess. And it takes a lot of practice and really a good coaching eye to be able to get that really well. And it's like the most important part of all this.
Yeah. Makes complete sense. So then to work on the timing, do you have them do like air swings or something, or how do you fix
that? There's a variety of drills. So first off, they need to understand what's being asked of them. And so that's where like demonstrating with an invisible kettlebell is good. Yep. And then you can have them, of course, practice with an invisible kettlebell or whatever.
Yeah.
And at the same time, stuff just changes when we get an actual kettlebell. Like,
yes,
I've had hundreds of people have a beautiful invisible kettlebell swing, and then you give them a kettlebell and their timing kind of goes out the window again.
Yeah.
But first thing, they need to understand what's being asked of them. And then once the coach and the student have a good, you know, they're on the same page as far as that goes, if the problem is persisting, then one of the drills that we like to do is put an object between their feet that is maybe a little bit shorter than knee height, and they have to do their swings without the kettlebell hitting this object. And obviously you want to pick something that is non-breakable, right? Like a short foam roller, or I have people do like a couple boxes of tissue stacked on top of each other or something like that, where if the kettlebell whacks it, it's not going to, you know, break or hurt anybody or anything like that. But what happens then is they have to really wait for the kettlebell to get right back by their hips before they move into their hip hinge. Because if they go early, the kettlebell is going to swing too low and it's going to knock over the foam roller or the tissues or whatever you've got there.
Makes complete sense. Yeah. Okay. What about, just to like pivot a little bit, like the Turkish get up? I love it. I get it. I get how it's kind of like dynamic postural stability. It's mobility. It's got all these great features. But to the layman's point of view, is it kind of looks like this funky breakdance move. How do you describe the why at like a basic client level behind the Turkish get up, or how, like someone's like, why are we doing this? What's your basic answer there?
Well, there's a lot of benefits to doing it. One is that it gets us moving in almost every different direction and plane of motion imaginable. And that's really healthy for the body to do. Most of our other weight room exercises only move in our sagittal plane. We only move front to back. And while there's certainly some obvious benefits to training that, we leave something on the table if we don't train our other directions and our planes of motion too. Correct. So that's one thing, is just for health and balance in the body. And then two, if we want to be really strong, there's a couple components to that. One of them is that we need our muscles to be able to generate force to move stuff. And there's a lot of exercises people know for that, right? Push-ups, bench presses, whatever, right? Those are great upper body strength exercises for that. The other part that I think a lot of people don't have a lot of appreciation for, and the Turkish get-up is a great exercise for this, is in order to have our muscles safely produce those forces, they need to be held in the joints need to be held in the right alignment, right? Just like you don't want to put a bunch of horsepower in the engine of your car if your chassis and your alignment are all out of whack. It doesn't make any sense. That's just going to create some problems. So the Turkish get-up really helps your body find great alignment and stability and control of your joints so that they're more primed for success should you go tackle other exercises.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And then I know I want to be respectful of your time and everything here, but one other question I wanted to get in was, do you use like maces and steel clubs and Indian clubs? And how do you view those like supplemental tools? And I know that's a big question, but do you do them more for like triplanar loading? Or are you doing them more as like kind of aerobic dynamic component to it? Or how do you view those tools?
Yeah, we do use our steel maces in some of our programs. And then I've also recently bought a small set of Bulgarian bags. And I like those because they get that full 360 component going around the torso of the lifter. And so you're going to get obviously like a really good 360 core engagement, moving in different planes of motion that even kettlebells don't have you moving in all that much. And for our jiu-jitsu folks out there, they really work on your balance a lot, right? You know, your opponent is going to be trying to push you, pull you, knock you in every different direction. And when we get our hands on some training that the Bulgarian bag or the mace is also trying to knock us in all these different directions, and we have to maintain our balance and our stability, I find a lot of benefit and carryover for those.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. All right. Well, last question I ask everybody is, theme of the podcast is optimizing your capacity. Obviously we're talking about using kettlebells and how that helps you improve your performance. What are you doing in 2021 to optimize your capacity in any and all fronts, from work or fitness or home life? What are you working on in 2021? Hopefully now that life's getting more normal.
I know, right? Well, I think everybody out there knows that stress management is a huge part of optimizing your performance. And I think we also all know that last year had a lot of stress, had a lot of stress in it. We had obviously COVID. In addition to COVID, we purchased a building for our business, and it had a 6-month construction project to build it out to our specs. We're now moved into it, but we're like just getting situated and going. So for me, it's stress management. I want to get the building settled. I want to get our business back on track. And my main stress outlet is jiu-jitsu, which I haven't been able to do in almost a year. And so getting the business back up to where we want it and getting me back on the jiu-jitsu mats is, those are the two biggest things for my stress level. And then everything else is going to be a lot easier once those are dialed in.
Yeah. I think, I mean, in my line of work, like the biggest pillar I address with people is their diet, their sleep, and their mindfulness or stress. And it's amazing how if you get that in order, a lot of your other issues just kind of automatically clean up.
Yeah, for sure.
So if people want to come train with you or follow you on social media or just see where you're at, how do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, so we're in Portland, Oregon, at the north end of Portland. You can find us online, industrialstrengthgym.com. Instagram is going to be the same thing, at industrialstrengthgym. And then if you're not in the Portland area, but you still want to do some kettlebell workouts with us, we built out last year a fully streaming online gym that mostly does kettlebells. We also do mobility and jujitsu on there. And that's going to be ondemand.industrialstrengthgym.com. And we have a really in-depth, detailed onboarding process for kettlebells where you're going to learn all of the techniques as well as go through about 6 weeks worth of hybrid workouts that are part technique refresher and using those techniques in a workout setting. And then we also film and upload all of our actual kettlebell workouts that we do in our classes here. And those are all streamable right on the website. So it's going to be ondemand.industrialstrengthgym.com.
Oh, wow, that's sweet. Check that out. Well, appreciate it, Tony. I know the audience will too. And yeah, we'll have to keep in touch and maybe do this again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Tony.
All right. Have a good one.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. Our goal is to help individuals like you learn practical knowledge you can apply today. If you want more information about how you can improve your capacity, visit our website at capacitypt.com. We have tons of info, including blogs, exercise videos, ebooks, and more. We're soon to offer services such as mentorship for clinicians and trainers, as well as online rehab and training. Stay tuned. If you like this episode, it would mean the world to us to leave a review. Again, our goal is to help and influence as many people as possible, and the best way to do that is through word of mouth. Leave us a review, tell your friends about it, shoot us an email with your feedback. We wish everybody the best. Expand your capacity.